Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harter. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Guten Tag and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's episode, we'll be discussing all of the action from match day 28. A weekend which saw the top two sides drop points, a winning streak come to an end, and lots of goals. It was a tour fest, one that many of us enjoyed, some not so much. Alongside me to discuss everything that happened from last week's action is the one and only Ever Lotabola. Ever, good morning to you. First of all, how are you? We can't avoid not talking about a particular game, so I'm sorry to say that. But it was a massive weekend at both ends of the table. One team in particular was a benefactor of the demise of a couple, whilst down the bottom, a team that looked completely done and dusted with a new coach. New hope, potentially.
Yeah, and I mean, at the same time, it made things much more interesting because it had made things even more closer. I mean, if you look back at last year, you had 11 points between the place 16 and 18. This is something I think it's safe to say we will not see this year. And I mean, the thing is, it's a result we're going to talk about a bit later, just took out a bit of that whole Hamburg derby on the weekend, because obviously we won't see St. Pauli leapfrog HSV, although I think some St. Pauli fans were hoping for it. But I mean, let's be honest, it was already a very tough thing to do before the Braunschweig game, and obviously with a loss as well. Just if you look at the goal difference, that would have been something that would have been a bit tricky, to say the least. But yeah, I mean, obviously, it's the league that keeps on giving. I mean, we always talk about those teams that at some stage they don't really have much to play for, but we aren't really reaching that point, because it seems like every team has still something to play for. Not a matter if promotion or relegation, but just like to keep their faces straight and to, just to give, obviously, because we're always coming to that point where you want to give your players some sort of direction, perspective towards the new season. Obviously, it's always easier if you finish your season on a high than on a low.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we've definitely seen over the last couple of weeks is teams that we were pretty sure were going to be in that level of kind of comfort are starting to get sucked into that bottom battle, even though there is still a bit of a points deficit. One team in particular we're going to talk about in this group, Hannover. Well, don't they have a big game on the weekend? But we're going to start with a team that had a really good opportunity to cement themselves into second place in the table. That was Hamburg SV. They travelled to Kaiserslautern in a traditional footballing battle. The Tifos were great, by the way. Both clubs really turned up with some great choreo. Over 49,000 packed into the Fritz Walter Stadion for a game that was evenly balanced for a long period of time. But eventually, Kaiserslautern getting the victory. Substitutes Terence Boyd scoring on 71 minutes when Ludovic Rice made a horrible mistake in trying to keep that ball in play. He slipped. John Zimmer attacks the edge of the box and whips a ball in, and Terence Boyd with a bit of trickery to beat Daniel Hoyer Fernandez. And then 14 minutes later, and this one really would have hurt just a little bit, Aaron Opoku, who of course started the season with Hamburg, he scored the second goal when, again, it was Rice who was dispossessed by Lorbinger. He fouls Lorbinger. It would have been a penalty in my eyes, and because it was inside the box, it would have been a yellow card. Ball comes out to Opoku, who puts the ball into the back of the net. And honestly, after that, Kaiserslautern could have made it 3 and 4. With Daniel Hanslick having a couple of chances, both saved by Hoyer Fernandez. And that's your result. 2-0 the final. It's Kaiserslautern's first win since match day 22 when they beat Greuther Fürth. For Hamburg, they are the gift that keeps on giving for many media outlets that enjoy the demise of the once dinosaur club of the Bundesliga. And they were just not good enough. And regardless of the two errors from Rice, who, let's be frank, over the course of his time there has been one of their best players, it's unfortunate that the mistakes happened to him exclusively, because it's rare that he makes those kinds of errors, but to make two in one game is very much unseen. They were so poor, Hamburg, they lacked any sort of offensive confidence. Rarely was Andreas Luther challenged in a way that you felt that it could lead to a goal. One shot on target for the entire game is meek at best. And they face a big challenge now. Obviously, big derby game Friday night. We've been pumping it up for the last couple of weeks. There are no excuses now. A defeat, again, and you question whether this is the pathway, because over the last month or so, you know, Volta has spoken some of the fighting words. And since those words have come out, they have really struggled to replicate that kind of tenacity on the pitch.
Yeah, and I mean, in this game, it's... We've seen Hamburg games where they didn't really use the chances, and in the end that kind of circled back to them in them not getting all 3 points or getting a point. But as you said, they looked like they were having a good start into the game, they were very naive, I thought, in the first half, and they were too quick, and they looked like a team was desperately trying to score a goal. I think Suhonen was a very good example of that. His attempts, like his first cross shot, whatever you want to call it, looks dangerous, but in the end, it doesn't really reach anyone except Luther. As the game progressed, you didn't really have the feeling this tension is going away from that Hamburg team. And I mean, obviously, then you had problems with players like Muheim, who got a yellow card very early in the game, where I think, I'm not a fan of diving, but Muheim says directly, yeah, didn't want to do that. It isn't a foul. And obviously, because normally a dive is a yellow card, but we've seen in so many instances that referees just keep the game going in that instance if they don't give it a penalty for every contact that is being made in the box. I thought it was a bit harsh to give a yellow card here because if you just look at Muheim, I think he very obviously tries to say, didn't want to do it, I don't want a penalty, I know it doesn't look good. Just thought in that instance it was a bit harsh, but nevertheless, way too less from Hamburg, even in the second half. In the end, as you've mentioned, look much more likelier that FTK is going to have a third or fourth goal than Hamburg getting one back in anyway. And obviously, Kaiserslautern didn't really come from huge self-confidence in that game either. I mean, it was their first win after 5 winless games. But they did very well, and they did what they do best, and that's upsetting those teams. And that's what I meant. They obviously, we won't see them because they had this series of not really winning games, that they are not in the mix with the St. Pauli and Düsseldorf up there, and Paderborn maybe in a slight way. But they have a lot to play for in terms of attracting new players for next season, because obviously, we know the second season in after you got promoted is sometimes just the more difficult one. I mean, we're going to talk about Rostock, who really experiences that right now. And obviously, this is a good way to attract players to come to them. Players of the Bundesliga who aren't really happy with their plays as substitutes. I mean, if you look at players like Erik Durm, he kind of showcased maybe that you can find a place in the Zweite Bundesliga team. And maybe if that's more your role, and if you want to play at a traditional team, Kaiserslautern could be that place. And obviously, with the table spot like that, obviously it's much easier for them. To give away contracts to and stuff and to attract new players for Hamburg. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I do understand in a way that Tim Adler was frustrated that he was being asked about the St. Pauli game. He said he doesn't watch Zweite Liga. Then obviously that was a bit taken out of context. Then him explaining, obviously I'll only watch analysis. But at the same time, like, it's good to have a confident coach. And obviously, HSV needs some sort of pressure because we all know they're supposed to be the team that goes up. But with the history that club had, and we said that before, saying to everyone who makes jokes about Hamburg, like, I don't know when he said that, 4 or 5 weeks ago, they don't know we're going to play Bundesliga next. It just opens them up for criticism, and I do feel sorry for HSV fans because it's not easy. Like, at some stage, those jokes are getting tired, but at the same time, we see the same mistakes being made over and over and over again. And yeah, I mean, this St. Pauli game is, even though St. Pauli is not going to leapfrog them, is going to be important nevertheless, because St. Pauli has something to play for in a way that they obviously lost the first time. I'm going to talk about that later, since Fabian Hürzeler took over and they want to quickly show, okay, this is not going to be the first series and now the second series where we start losing games or not winning games. So they want to play for that and obviously for the prestige in Hamburg. And Hamburg has much more to lose. St. Pauli still has nothing to lose. Hamburg has everything to lose. And yeah, this is games like this with a lot of fans traveling to that game, obviously not easy for them, and the pressure is there. And I do hope for everyone's sake that Hinwalter finds the right words outside and inside the club and the media, because obviously this is in the end what is the thing with internet. Things you say stay there and they will be used against you.
We are 100%, and if you look, Twitter is an excellent platform for this, where there are a lot of people who will moderate parts of the full quote and just here it is, and then so it's he doesn't need telling. He understands the situation. They lost the first meeting against St. Pauli 3-0, and that game, they went down to 10 men just under half an hour, and we'll talk about it later, but they need to find the magic sauce, and they need to find it quickly, because they might be at the moment 6 points clear of those chasing, which includes St. Pauli. But the real issue for them is keeping in touch with Heidenheim and Darmstadt. And if they're off the chain, they don't want to go through the playoff again. We already know how hard it is to get out of that relegation playoff as a Zweite Bundesliga club. It's happened 3 times in since its return since 2007. That tells you everything. And the last time it was done, they won on away, Union Berlin won on away goals. They didn't genuinely win. So the pressure's on. The pressure is genuinely on them. Whereas Kaiserslautern, we can say that they are definitely safe for another season. And Eva, great points on, who they can attract. I think they have the advantage over other teams that have gained promotion, being that they are, in terms of a club and stature and historical significance, they have that advantage over clubs like, if we look at who's potentially coming up next season, Wiesbaden or Elversborg, Osnabrück, insert whichever team you wish. They have a massive advantage in that, Kaiserslautern were a Bundesliga champion and so on and so forth. And you look at the teams in the Drittliga that could come up, there's also Saarbrücken, but they look like they're playing a lot of these teams. Saarbrücken, Dynamo Dresden, Osnabrück, Waldhof Mannheim are all fighting for the playoff spot at the moment. So, because Freiburg are third and they can't gain promotion because they are a second team, but they shouldn't even be in that league in the first place. Speaking of a team that has actually experienced in winning the relegation playoff battle, Fortuna Düsseldorf. Remember when they beat Hertha all those years ago? No, me neither. But they played Darmstadt on the weekend, and they have a really good record, surprisingly, at home against Darmstadt. The last time that they'd lost a home game to the team that is currently top of the table, 1988, by a score of 1-2. Would it be any different? Well, Düsseldorf had the best chances early. Marcel Schuhen was very busy. He made an excellent double save on 11 minutes. He denied, I think it was Oberdorf and then Kovnatski, which should have been a goal. You'd expect Kovnatski to score. Then Darmstadt kind of really controlled the game. They had a ton of half chances, a lot of crosses that were half a step too far for a player. It was a weird game for them because over the last few weeks we've seen and months, we've seen them be sort of the team that has been second best but finding the way to win. So for this will feel really weird to them because they were the better team for good phases of the game, but they lost because on 51 minutes, the local boy, the local man, the local lad, Emmanuel Joa, scored. He scored. It was deflected. Schuhen was... I have sympathy for Schuhen, and the defense did the right thing. It's just the intervention caused Schuhen to go the wrong way, and Ayoa scored, and that was it, really. I mean, they did hit the post. I think Marvin Malim hit the post as the game progressed, but nothing. They just never had anything that was enough to break down Florian Carstenmeyer's goal. When you have 20 shots on goal and only three of them are on target, that's a pretty wasteful day at the office. And fortunately for them, it didn't hurt them too much. They still have a nice, comfortable advantage. Two games clear of Heidenheim. 4 points is the advantage. 5 points to Hamburg. So it's not a bad loss to have. However, it may concern them a little bit that with all the opportunities that they had on goal, and they had some really good ones on the weekend, they didn't make the most of them.
Yeah, and I mean, even Daniel Thun said after this game that once again, Darmstadt impressed him and they should have won that game.
Yeah, he's wrong.
I mean, it's always a weird kind of compliment if you're the winner. Except, oh, well, the other team should have won. Yeah, I mean, it's... In my opinion, Darmstadt played a bit like they were one goal up in some ways. Like, we've seen it before, Darmstadt can tired their opponent into doing nothing and just being frustrated, and I had the feeling that they were playing this, although they actually did not take the lead in that game. And this, as you've mentioned before, the stats with only three shots on target out of 20, you can see that the precision was missing, and that also Düsseldorf, although players like Tanaka were missing in midfield, and like one of the players, obviously, was very important in that Bielefeld game, that they did well, and that they, yeah, kind of luck was on their side. The funny thing is with Düsseldorf, each week we kind of have to reassess where they at. Like, after the 2-2 against Hamburg, or before the 2-2 against Hamburg, we were saying, okay, if they win against Hamburg, they're back in business. Then they played a 2-2 draw. We didn't really know what to do with that. But at the same time, because Hammer didn't pick up points, it meant, okay, they're still in game. Then they drew against Bielefeld, and we said, okay, that's probably it. Now they won against Darmstadt, and we say, okay, what the hell? Like, what are we supposed to do? And now, obviously, a very important game, because they play Nuremberg, and they are really, really hoping, because it was... I was on a podcast with the Düsseldorf fan. They're really, really looking at that Hamburg derby on the weekend, because for them, obviously, the best result would be a draw. If either team wins, isn't really good for them, because I think as of now, Düsseldorf has the shares points with St. Pauli. They both have 47 points, I think. Hamburg, obviously, 53. Mm-hmm. So you know kind of where they're coming from if they're hoping for a draw here. And they're playing Nuremberg, and it's not going to be an easy game because obviously Nuremberg has a lot to play for as well. Still in the relegation battle. And you've seen against Bielefeld that they were kind of relaxing on that thought, okay, we're 2-1 up, going to be difficult to score against us. And then Bielefeld kind of surprised them a bit in the end, and obviously with Tanaka had to be subbed off and stuff. And I mean, what's not going to get easier for them is that Hennings is out for a couple of games at least. And although he hasn't had the goal impact like before, he still has an impact, and obviously he's still good as a substitute as well. And obviously because Daniel Ginchek isn't really filling the void he is supposed to, obviously good to see players like Ioa. I think it's a second goal in a row for him. It's obviously good for him. And what I found very impressive is that you could very visibly see that Düsseldorf tried to take over control in the second half, and it did that very well. Like, they took the control away from Darmstadt for huge portions of that second half, and Darmstadt couldn't really find a way to answer to that in the end. And I mean, they gave Darmstadt the fair share of possession, but you could see that they at the same time frustrated Darmstadt in kind of, using that possession. And that was a very thought through idea by Tune, and it shows one more time that he's very his ideas of playing are very diverse, so you can very much try to find a way, depends on whose opponent or who they're playing. Again, Nuremberg next, and Karlsruhe and Kiel, so two sides where we might suggest they only have the spot in the table to play for at that stage. It's always difficult to say if that is good or bad, in my opinion, because obviously it's you sometimes have the feeling they don't give their 100% for 90 plus minutes. At the same time, there is some stage at this, well, we don't care what you do. We can win this 5-0. We can lose this 5-0. This can go out 5-5. At this stage, we don't really care. So it's always very difficult to kind of figure out what's coming. But yeah, obviously for Düsseldorf, they're in the business. For Darmstadt, I think they won't be that sore because of the Hamburg defeat, but obviously because of the next result, they kind of not totally happy with that. But they like it's some of those results where you say it's okay, it should not happen too many times, but it's okay as of now.
Yeah, I mean they do have plenty of things they can take away from the game, and they were, in many respects, they were close to having all the answers to that, to the Düsseldorf game. It just didn't come about. They've got Karlsruhe on Friday night. That is the other game that's on Friday night, which may not get as much attention, but the importance of that game will be very significant in how the title race or the promotion race pans out, because we can use the hypotheticals. If Hamburg do this, if Heidenheim do this, but as we say every week, if you take care of your own business, the rest will sort itself out, especially in the position they're in. They're top of the table. They're 4 points clear. Hey, look, it's good. It's all good. They're all happy. So that will be a tricky game for them, because Karlsruhe have a knack of busting the dam open in games that they have no right busting the dam open. We should talk about Heidenheim, because they are the other team that is in this battle. They went to the Heinz von Heiden Arena to take on Hanover. Hanover, of course, who were beaten 6-1 last time out. And there was chatter that another equally poor result like that would see Stefan Lytle kicked to the curb. They had the best chance early in the game. Dominic Kuhn, whose initial set piece was cleared away, but he picked the ball up at the edge of the area, and his pile driving effort rattled the woodwork. In fact, the people behind the goal thought it was a goal, but it was not. The key in this game was efficiency, and Heidenheim had it in spades. in a first half where they had 3 shots on target, they scored 3 times. 3 goals in the space of 19 minutes, because there were 4 extra minutes in this first half. Jan-Nicolas Bester with the opener. Beautiful goal. All the 2 of the 3 goals were just beautiful. That one was in particular nice. The assist from Forenbach to Kleindienst, and Kleindienst chipping Zila 5 minutes later was superb. 21 goals. This time he gets his 21st goal. We won't talk about Kaiserslautern where he missed that pen. And then 4 minutes into added time of the first half, Bester assisting Dennis Tomala, 3-0 at the break, and that was pretty much the game. Hanover had a penalty when Patrick Meinke fouled Harvard Nielsen. It was pretty clumsy from Meinke. It's not often you say Meinke doing something like that, but it perfectly encapsulated what a miserable day it was in Hanover when Maximilian Bayer's penalty was easily turned away by Kevin Müller. And that's your final 3-0. So Heidenheim into second place. They're 4 points behind Darmstadt. Hanover, 3 defeats in their last 4. They currently sit 7 points clear of the playoff spot. But as far as I'm aware from what I've heard, but this game coming up against Arminia Bielefeld on Saturday is a do-or-die game for the current Hanover project. They were okay in periods, but they got cut open really easily. And when Heidenheim, who didn't really offer a whole lot, but when they got forward, they always seemed like they were going to score. And the 3 goals they conceded, Hanover, you know, inability to clear the defense, caught on the break, just beaten in an aerial duel. Like, from an outsider's perspective, it is clear that this team almost needs a complete teardown job and start again, because the current team is not good enough for what Stefan Leitl wants to do. But also, it became clear, I think there's a clip where in the main curva when Tomala scores, there's a Hanover fan cheering the goal. It's the funniest thing. I don't know how, I always keep seeing it. It's this guy, this one guy is like cheering, and the people around him are like, what are you doing? Stop. We're 3-0 down. But that sums it up, because it's almost like they don't take the current team seriously. And the way they performed, the way they played, is just, they're just miserable to watch. It's unpleasant to watch Hanover football. And like, if there was a team that could willingly, you know, protest that the season should end today, it would be them. Because it's going downhill really quickly. I don't think they'll be in the bottom 3 by any stretch. They've still got the advantage, but the way things are going, the way they're conceding goals, like it's an 80% sale at your favorite clothing store. Like, they need, something needs to change quickly. And you know, even the implementation of Julian Berner, who of course has one more game left before they have to give him an extension, even that didn't work.
It would be kind of running when that happens on the weekend against Bielefeld, against his former club. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Teich had started, which I liked in general, were a bit better in the beginning. Kuhn hits the post, but the thing with Derek Kuhn is, offensively, he's a good player, but defensively, and this is his first job on the pitch, is defending. And twice in this game he does not do that job well. For the first one, if you clear a ball like that, I mean, it looks a bit weird, unfortunate, like where his header is landing in front of Bester. I mean, we know that Heidenheim is efficient, they don't need many chances to score. If you haven't learned that from them since you played them, don't know, not a good thing. Like, not really what you want to do. And the way that I was really shocked is that how they completely fell apart after the 1-0. Like, just Bester can take away that whole defense with one pass, and Kleindienst can even, like, pass it to, I'm not sure who's running along the lines with him, can pass it through there. Too easy. And then for the 3-0 against Wurzik, Kuhn is not jumping with Tomala. Once again, it's his job as a defender, or it's everyone's job in set piece defending. That's the only thing. Don't let your opponent player in that situation jump higher than you, and you just don't jump. And I mean, that's the thing. At halftime, this game was done and dusted. They're not HSV or Kaiserslautern in that matter. Was going to be difficult when the get-go. They don't have the self-confidence. And obviously, as you mentioned, the penalty, it really sums them up. Same time, really tough, obviously, for a young player like Bayer to take the... for him, it's not really encouraging. But yeah, this Bielefeld game... I mean, they've played Bielefeld and Nuremberg next. So... obviously, they at least Bielefeld can't leapfrog them, but it's like they want to keep their head high. And the thing is, the head is already like very, very, very low, and they don't have that many. Like, and play for the fans at least. I mean, there are 3,000 or 3,500 fans traveling to Bielefeld. It's only 1 hour drive, obviously, but still. 3,500 or something like that are traveling to Bielefeld. The IM is probably going to be sold out at this stage. Over 23,500 tickets are sold. But Bielefeld and Hannover fans are weird with this. Don't know what's wrong with us in that matter. But yeah. And Heidenheim does what Hamburg and Darmstadt fails to do from time to time. They look like a very grown up team. They're like, guys, listen, this is how the grown-up do that. They weren't pushed down but they from that result against Kaiserslautern. They got back into the game and they won very comfortably. They're playing Kiel next, Fürth, Magdeburg. It's Magdeburg. Sorry. Please don't kill me. I always pronounce my name wrong. So yeah, it's... For Heidenheim, they look the most comfortable team, and they look much more comfortable than HSV, obviously, as well. And yeah, it's going to be interesting how they play against Kiel on the weekend.
Yep, and that is a World Feed game as well on the Sunday afternoon. Real good opportunity for them. They will know exactly what's happened before them because both Hamburg and Darmstadt are playing Friday night. What an advantage that is, especially playing on their home turf against a team that is erratic, confusing. We don't know. But great opportunity for them. And obviously, as you mentioned, Eva, the three games, if Stefan Leitl gets to the third game, let alone the second game, the masochists who will be at the Alm on the weekend will definitely get an experience. We'll talk about Bielefeld in the next section. And that ends the first period. We should take a quick breather. And on the other side, we'll go to the second group. And we are going to start with St. Pauli. Can they make it 11 on the bounce? Let's find out. They hosted Eintracht Braunschweig. St. Pauli were hoping to extend their club's record winning streak to 11. They hosted Eintracht Braunschweig, a side that doesn't win away from home very often. But heading into this match, had won two of their last three games. There was a lot of excitement. Another full house at the Millentor, just under 30,000. And none of us could have expected the start to the game because 41 seconds in, Braunschweig were in front. It was a quick sort of transitional break from Braunschweig, Uja to Multaup. Multaup getting in a bit of a... He looked to have been well defended by Saliakas, but it didn't matter because Multaup with an excellent left boot, maybe a slight deflection. Didn't matter though. 1-0 after 41 seconds. It was looking really good. And Hamburg fans, of course, in the area were all cheering the fact that Braunschweig were up. They would have been even more thrilled when one of their former own players made it to. That made no sense. This time, a piece of individual brilliance from Manuel Vinsheimer, who burnt his two options on the left and the right. He could have played a ball earlier, but he made up for it with one hell of a goal. Penetrating inside to the area, his left foot somehow didn't hit the defender and beats Nikolai Vasil to his left and into the side netting of the goal, and 2-0. And that was the score at the break. So lots of shock here. Braunschweig up, away from home. Things are looking good. But St. Pauli would start to make a push. They thought they had a goal midway through the second half when Jackson Irvine found Dapper Afalayan. But Afalayan was offside. They thought they had a penalty for handball. That was not given. They did get a goal late in the second half when Afalayan found Yakov Medic, who's made a knack of turning into a pseudo-striker. His effort just beat Hoffman at the near post. And it was interesting to see Hoffman get the start over Yasmin Fazic after Fazic missed last time out with a yellow-red card suspension. Change of the times, maybe. However, St. Pauli weren't able to find a secondary goal, meaning Braunschweig have now won 3 out of their last 4 games. They move up to 12th and a 5-point buffer to Jan Regensburg in 16th. Whereas St. Pauli, they remain in 5th, only not even goal difference. They have scored less goals than Fortuna Düsseldorf. That is why they are 5th and 6 points behind Hamburg. This was a strange game. Braunschweig scored on both of their shots on goal target. They were mightily efficient in that they were able to make things happen. But one player in particular who makes this team a lot better defensively is Filip Benkovic, who, for whatever reason, and I can't explain it, but besides the fact that he's a former Croatian international and he's played Champions League and he's really good, he makes that defense infinitely better. It doesn't matter who they put next to him, whether it's Di Medina, Kurice, whoever. But there is a belief they could really do this. They could do what most of us thought they couldn't, which was survive. And I was one of them, so I'll put my hand up. But they just defended so well for so long in this game. They got a little bit fortunate, but they did what no one has been able to do this calendar year, which is beat St. Pauli.
And I mean, they, in a way, St. Pauli defense in the first half tragically reminded me half of this season. Because I thought, obviously it's an early goal, but Shigala and Zaliakis seem very unlucky, especially Shigala. Obviously, it's deflected by Zaliakis. But they seem unlucky. And obviously, at the same time, can't get a brilliant goalkeeper. I think it's going to be very, very difficult for Fazic to come back into that goal, because obviously, Anton Hoffman was implemented as the first choice keeper. Fazic as the captain kind of overtook, and obviously with his experience, but he kind of bottled that whole experience thingy with his red card. And on Tom Hoffman, obviously together with players like Benkovic, I mean, we said it before, that defense, that there were so many injured players, was just a very difficult thing for Braunschweig to kind of overcome in this season. Or during this season. But I mean, this was a good game for them. The goal for St. Pauli just came too late. Very, very good defending. They didn't really look like they were going to fall apart, and that's a huge compliment for them. And I mean, they were the first team that managed to score 2 goals against that Hürzeler side. Obviously for St. Pauli, it's always weird. You can say at the same time, this was the worst possible moment to lose their first game. At the same time, in a way, it could be the best, because then the pressure is a bit off for them for that Hamburg game, because obviously this wouldn't be the first game they want to lose in 2023. And now that pressure is a bit off. It's like, obviously, in the end, you don't want to lose any game, but I think it would have been a bit too much winning 11 games in a row in the end. I don't want to win the, like, I mean, and for Bielefeld it's also good because the pressure isn't on for them to be the first team to challenge. So I'm probably next week, so yay. No, but I mean, everything else you said, I would agree. They were defensively, that has been their big, like, one of their biggest problems this season, and they're, with that game, they really showcased what they can do and why players like Benkovic were picked, and why, yeah, Braunschweig officials thought it would be enough to get through this season. But yeah, obviously still one game. We always say that one game does not mean anything if you not keep going. And that Magdeburg game is going to be huge on the weekend. Because obviously Magdeburg made it more interesting with their result on the weekend, which we're going to talk about later. And yeah, for Braunschweig, it would be the ultimate way to kind of say, okay, maybe statistically we wouldn't be through, but more or less for the Mainz, if we win that game, we put Magdeburg deeper, depends on the other results, deeper into that relegation fight. And then we would have something that's not very common, that two promoted sides will stay in the league, actually.
Yeah, 100%. And it's such a fascinating storyline with Braunschweig. And, you know, at the start of the season, you would be fair to say that they had a relatively weak squad, a manager who'd been sacked twice in a single season with two different clubs the last time he was in the league. You know, a team that has struggled to score goals when they've been in, you know, over the last few years in the when they've been in the second division, but they just have, you know, that fight, the tenacity. There's a real never say die spirit that resonates. They're so impressive that not in terms of the way they play, but just the way that as a collective they work for each other. You know, I'm almost convinced that there is a believe sign in the change room, because they do believe, same colours. They do believe. I'm going to get
you. Take that back. Right now, I'm going to quit that podcast.
Well, okay.
And you can finish this by yourself.
It wouldn't be the first time, but I better stop, otherwise someone's going to be flying to Australia and ending my life. So. I do take it back. Regardless of what just happened there, there is definitely a belief that they can win games. Belief, not, it's a different word. And they've shown that. And as you said, Eva, look, they've got two of the next three games against teams in the bottom six, and they've been really good at home. One of those is definitely an away game, but if they can get 4 points from the next three games, they're in good shape. It's hard to see teams below them somehow getting on a run, especially the bottom. You know, you look at everyone in the bottom six, only one team managed to win, everyone else lost. So they've put themselves in a really good position. And if for those people who watch The Simpsons, which I'm sure there are many cultured folks that listen to The Simpsons on this podcast. Braunschweig is Homer Simpson chasing the Flanders Geo, the Flanders being Hanover, because they're only 2 points behind their friendly neighborhood club. So they'll be feeling really good about that if they could not only continue on their merry way, but eclipse Big Brother. That would feel pretty good for them. Let's make a move to Karlsruhe, and Karlsruhe hosted Arminia Bielefeld at the Wildparkstadion on Sunday afternoon. It started well for Bielefeld, who were, in large part, the better team, winning a penalty on 8 minutes when Sebastian Jung stuck a hand out for whatever reason. Ball struck it, handball. Robin Hack scores from the spot, 1-0 to the visitors, and they held that lead to the break. They continued the attacking flair. They hit the post four times in this game, which is just incredibly unlucky. Some would say that's league-leading unlucky. They actually lead the league in posts hit in the season, which is a mighty effort. Kornsbrucker hit the post twice, Close and Okugawa as well. And as so often is the case, Yep, you understand the story. If you don't take your chances, you will be punished, and boy, were they punished, and heavily punished. On 63 minutes, Simona Rapp, who'd been on for 30 seconds, maybe a minute, heads home from a set piece, and then just 7 minutes later, Emmanuel Pretor fouls Lucas Cueto. Initially not given as a penalty, but as people are starting to learn when they go to football games in the stadium, when the ref goes to the monitor, or he takes 3/4 hour to come up with a decision, it's most likely going to be overturned. And this one, which, to be fair, looked more clearer as a penalty, and I'm not sure why Alexander Sather didn't see that, but anyway. Marvin Vanecek scored, and then 5 minutes later, Kaufman went individual, outrunning the Bielefeld defender, and then scoring a goal that he shouldn't have scored, to be honest. You know, as good as Friesel's been this season, he's had a couple of those where the ball was somehow squeezed its way through the near post, through his body. He's an emotional guy. You can see that he saves goals like people score them, and I love that about him. But he gets sometimes he lets the odd howler go through, and that was definitely a howler. So a 1-0 deficit turned into a 3-1 lead, and then Bielefeld did get a quick goal back when Brian Lasma, who again played the Joker role, came on, scored a goal, 3-2. You know, it seemed like a pretty rough result as it was going, and then 3 minutes later, Vanecek scored again, a beautiful goal from outside the box. Curling away from Friesel, not much he could have done about that one, and that was your final, 4-2. It was telling what Bielefeld players, especially Fabian Klose, said at the end of the game. You know, they should have been 2-3-0 up, but stupid mistakes proved costly. And you look at individual scenes and what Bielefeld could have done better, and it has been their Achilles heel for most of the season. It has been the defensive end. They had no Andrada, no Ramos. They for 60 minutes anyway, looked okay in the defensive end, but to give up 4 goals in 20 minutes in a game that they were in relative control of, as a fan, I could imagine it must be quite infuriating.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I have a lot of thoughts. First of all, Christian Eichner said it himself, Bielefeld could have been like 5-1 up in the 16th minute, because Kaku was not good in this game for the majority of the parts. There were so many mistakes in the first half. Like players like Vanecek, Jensen completely missing their step, in my opinion. Only Vanecek's second goal in any way explains why he is in the team of the week. That's just my personal opinion. The assist he gave could have been my grandmother, but that's just my personal opinion. Yeah, and I mean, Bielefeld looked good. This was probably one of the best games I've seen under Uwe Koshinat, which makes it one of the best games I've seen this season, automatically. So good. Like, this is what we were wishing for from the beginning on, with the team that have that pressing, that forcing their team, the opponents, to make mistakes, and such easy mistakes. But the thing is, in the end, and that's football, if you don't use your opponent's mistakes and hit the woodwork like 4 times, obviously that's luck, but at the same time, you can't expect that the luck is running out for the other team as well. I would still think that the score was way too high for Karlsruhe. Obviously they were efficient, but they were not 4 goals good, my opinion. I think the 3-2 would have been enough. Also think Mikkel Kaufmann shouldn't have been on the pitch for his third goal, because we've seen in the past that, like, normally if you put your elbow in your opponent's face, that's normally already a yellow card. Mikkel Kaufmann did not get a yellow card for that, but actually for protesting for like a minute on that this wasn't a foul. We've also seen protesting going on, this could be a second yellow card. And obviously, just not a huge fan of Mikkel Kaufmann in general. I think, obviously, as a football player itself, he's good, but I just don't think he's a very fair football player. I think he should concentrate more on actually playing football than fouling and being fouled. Yeah, I mean, as that the thing is, in general, offensively, you can't really say a lot about the Bielefeld team because it was good, but obviously defensively, this has been like under Koshinat, you had in 5 games, you have four different lineups in general, and also four different lineups in the defense. I would like to see three in the back again, or like the 3-5 that we played against Fortuna Düsseldorf, against Hanover on the weekend in general, because I think like it just secures some more, although obviously we've conceded with that as well. Funnily enough, we only conceded one goal in that game where Gebauer, who is not a typical right back, played right back, but also they switched into three in the back in that game as well. So that's where like kind of pulled Prittel always back. Yeah, I would like to see Andrade and Ramos back for the game against Hanover. Yeah, I mean, in the end, for Lasma, I think it's good to fulfill that Joker role twice. I mean, this is something he kind of wants to probably improve goal scoring. He has 5 goals now, similar with Klose or equally with Klose. Yeah, and I mean, Klose and Uwe Koshinat said it both after the game, and I think that's one thing where Bielefeld fans think, okay, at least they are in an agreement, because that had it seems like a stupid thing to say, but that's something that was not necessarily the case. And also Prittel, who kind of said himself for the penalty, is his mistakes, is his mistake. Uwe Koshinat said after the game, that it's just going to be a very difficult task to always score like 5 or 6 goals just because you concede like three. I just quickly want to touch on the penalty on the second one. I think the first one we don't really have to discuss. I think it's we forgot that for the St. Pauli Braunschweig game. Going to talk about another handball that was given later on. Don't really know why St. Pauli didn't get one, but that's not the reason why they lost this game. It's a penalty. It's okay to give a penalty for me. It's okay to overrule it with VAR if the referee didn't see the scene. Both things aren't the case. Zata is seeing what is happening, and he does like this scene where we know, like, he puts us and does like the last ketchup song kind of stuff, where he says that it's not like it's not a foul. For me, still, how VAR should work is then that the VAR says, you were wrong, this is a penalty, you don't need to look at it, it's a very clear penalty. Not that it takes 3 minutes to overrule, and this is why. This is what Uwe Koshinat says. He would agree that it is a foul, but what and we spoke about this before, what we kind of have the feeling is that VAR is not an overruling, but a second choice for referees to look at a scene. And this is not how it is supposed to be. And obviously, as well, it being in the stadium, it's just like you could see once again fans from both teams which chanting, "You destroy our sport." And if it's like that, I still have to agree, because we said so many times before, in a way, we believe in the technology, but I have the feeling it's getting worse and worse every year. And that's not something I like to accept, that this is how it's supposed to be. And like, I can love with the VAR. I'm not the either or type, but I would say how it is in place now, it's something I wouldn't really go with, because we've seen in the past as well that the refs are going out watching at the scene and do give the same exact decision again. And this for me speaks for you give second choices. Like, it was the same thing with the red card against Sandhausen versus St. Pauli, where Aitken goes out, he took the right decision, and he looks at it again to be sure. And there was no doubt in whatsoever that this was going to be a red card. So this is where I still say it's not a you get a second view on that scene. This is not how it's supposed to work. And this is where, in the end, penalty was right, but the way it went together, this is where I have a problem with.
Yeah, the process is broken, and you know, my understanding is VAR is for clear and obvious mistakes, not micromanaging the game. Like as probably one of the minority of people who actually think that the technology has its place in the game, I just don't trust the laws of the game nor the people who are running, who are in charge of it. And I've spoken about it so many times, and I'd rather not continue to, you know, cut sick on it. But obviously the in-stadium in particular is disgraceful. Got to show the incident on the big screen. I would love to hear the referees go through and talk what is happening. Just have more transparency. People deserve the right to know. Don't hide it behind some stupid graphic that says checks in progress and then it's a penalty and then check complete. What kind of BS is that? Give what people pay for on TV to see on the television should be in the stadium. That should be a non-negotiable. Not just two sets of fans in a stadium trying to figure out what the hell is going on, why is it taking so long, and then something being overturned but not having any clarity of why it's been overturned until they actually get the chance to look at it when they leave the stadium. Let's be better. We have the technology. Let's use the technology. Let's be be transparent with the fans. And do you know what that means? It means that less people will be on the referees' backs as to why they are so incompetent at what they do, why they don't trust their own decision-making process, and why every time, every weekend, every podcast, and we're not the only ones that would do it, complain about why VAR is so bad when it's clear that there is some good to be had with the technology. That's my two cents. Karlsruhe at Darmstadt, Bielefeld, as we've spoken, big game. They're wearing a special kit as well to celebrate their West German championship from 1923. They've got a nice... Yep. That's what they said. That was the media release. They've got a nice, authentically nice replicated old logo. The rest of it is basically black. So, like every other Sondertro kit these days, it's got nice little graphics.
But it's quite funny because it's still...
wrong.
Nicer than the Hanover ones and stuff. It's not just pure black. It's always very funny of like deception of stuff because Bielefeld, like half of the Bielefeld fans are like, what is this? Mm. Half of the Bielefeld fans are like, shut up and take my money. And half of the like majority of other fans of other clubs are like, I want this. Why can't we have this? Mm. And I think in general, expectations of Bielefeld fans, like for example after last season Sondertrikot, which was really cool, is very high. But yeah, it's also very funny if you get into that whole 1923 stuff. It's a very very complicated matter. And I read a lot of texts now about this, courtesy of Tim, who really wants to find out whether we were champions in 1923. It's a very, very complicated matter, and the way they outplayed that championship or let it play out is, Jesus Christ, you need like a known degree for understanding that. And I have no idea why that didn't get through until 100 years later. You're... did not recognize this. I was being very ironic because it's a huge mess.
Guess we forgot about it. And before we do forget about it, let's actually move to the next game because, you know, we've still got four more games to go. Holstein Kiel hosted Nuremberg on Saturday. Big game for Nuremberg, of course. They want to climb out of that relegation battle. Kiel fighting for consistency and figuring out what they're going to look like next season. One thing is for certain, Steven Skripski is going to be a potentially looked at individual, especially teams that get relegated from the Bundesliga. He has 13 goals this season. He opened the scoring when Vindel Janssen gave majority of goalkeeping experts an absolute aneurysm when he has Lewis Holtby, who's probably not the most assuming pressing option bearing down at you, but why he takes so long to distribute the ball, I have no idea. Ball just cannons into Holtby. Skrzybski almost air whiffs it. He gets a little bit on it, and then Florian Flick bundled the ball into the back of the net. They gave the goal to Skrzybski, which might be the only time I disagree with it. It kind of looks like it came off Flick, and it didn't look like it was going to even reach the goal line or even be on target. But I'm happy they gave it to Skrzybski. I don't care. I feel sorry for Florian Flick. He had a pretty tough day. It was his errant pass that led to, well, Vindol had time. He just, well, I don't know what the hell he was doing. It was 2-0 on 39 minutes. Fabian Riese, who scored his 9th goal of the campaign, nicely controlled chest and volley effort, passed through the legs of Jan Jimmera and then passed Vindol. So 2-0 at the break. I did not change the notes. Felix Leukemper was a sub in the second half, and he scored the 2-1. Nathaniel Brown with the assist, but Nürnberg really never had enough to break down Kiel. Good result for Kiel, of course. They are eighth. They're on 40 points. Pretty comfortable. I would say that they are safe for another season in the Zweite Liga. Nürnberg on 30 points. They're 14th, 3 points ahead of Jan Regensburg. And of course, they are playing Fortuna Düsseldorf on the weekend. Really liked what Kiel did. It's the usual suspects. It's Riese, who's been in really good form of late. They dominated the midfield battle for pretty much the majority of the game. The scoreline seems a little bit flattering to Nürnberg. I think Kiel had a lot of really good chances in this game. Frin Jonsson had that chance early on. And look, they were wrapped. Marcel was wrapped to get the win. I'm sorry, that was really bad. I'll use that one before as well. But look, for them, it's all about points accumulating and figuring out what their squad's going to look like in the future. They took care of business, and in the end, that's all that matters.
Yeah, and I mean, in a way, it was not that typical for Nürnberg, because we've seen in the past that Nürnberg was actually the team who was kind of, taking the first chances. They weren't really managing this in this game. Yeah. And obviously, with that rather early goal, so in this first 20 minutes, they had real difficulties, and was not that, like in the past, you said, okay, Nürnberg is the better team, the other team is going to score, but actually the other team was the better team at that stage already, and they just didn't manage to be precise enough to have enough shots on target, to create enough chances in the box. They just couldn't really manage that, and was obviously for Kiel, it was good to only concede one goal this time. In the end, it was a rather comfortable win for them, as you've mentioned. They, once again, obviously, Riese, with a fantastic performance, could have had a second one as well. For Nürnberg, funny stat here that was mentioned by the Sportschau. Nürnberg hasn't scored a goal before the 56th minute in 2023. And when you're already 2 goals down at that stage, and you only have like 30 minutes left, it doesn't help either. And obviously, with the red card against Kastrup, who I think it's two games, right?
Yeah, it's an order. It was a straight red. Two matches, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's 2 matches, and obviously that was a done deal for everything. And I mean, it really summed up Nürnberg's performance in that game in the end, and their attempts going forward. Obviously good win for Kiel, and it seems like it's only the table spot, as mentioned before, what they're playing for now. Obviously, they have some saying in the whole part, obviously, with their next opponents. But yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Absolutely. We've wrapped that one up really nicely. Let's take our final break And on the other side, we'll get to our three relegation candidates. And we're going to start with Sandhausen when they made the journey to Magdeburg. With Tomas Oral kicked to the curb, and fairly so, after no wins in a what was a unsurprisingly short spell, Gerhard Kleppinger, who has been at the club before, is once again part of the club's rescue mission. They made a long journey to Magdeburg, some making an even further pilgrimage from Southeast Asia to get to Magdeburg, to see a game of, well, considerable confusion. In the initial phases, it was all Magdeburg. They had chance after chance, lots of attics going forward. But we've said it already in this podcast, and we're not going to say it again. They were punished. Sandhausen on a set piece, Çalhanoğlu's ball in to Alexander Esfain, and the ball was chested in by Dario Dumic. There was all kinds of confusion on who actually scored the goal. The Bundesliga app was having an aneurysm as to who the goal should be accredited to. But it was clear and really good decision by the Lino, by the way, because, you know, we can be harsh on the officials, but kudos for him for getting the call correct. Dumic was onside when the ball chested into, basically cannoned into his chest. Ball was going in regardless, but Dario just poached it for himself, and you know what? I'm all for it. Dumic would be on hand once again in the second half, and again it was a set piece. This one's a really interesting one because it looks like there is a foul prior to the ball being kicked, and the referee almost looked like he was about to blow the whistle. He let the game recommence, and it was a wonderfully worked set piece that eventually found Dumic for the second goal, and 2-0, and Magdeburg were stunned. And the small contingency of Sandhausen fans who made the journey probably could not believe their luck that they actually looked competent going forward. We look all right. Things are happening. They would eventually concede. Cristiano Puccini getting a goal on the stroke of 90 minutes. But full time. First win since match day 18 for Sandhausen. We know who they beat. And an important win for them because with the results, which we'll talk about in this segment, the only team in the bottom six to win, 1 point away from Hansa, 3 points away from the playoff. They do have the inferior goal difference. That comes with the territory of being the worst defensive team in the league. But for them, it won't matter if we're talking short term. They are just thrilled to win the game against a Magdeburg team who really kind of just didn't get it going after they conceded the first goal. It was really disappointing because the opening 20 minutes, they were untouchable. They looked really calm. They had the confidence. They had put aside the fact that they'd thrown away the 2 points against Jan Regensburg. Things were happening. They looked very dynamic. They were dangerous going in the final third, but no end product. And basically, Sandhausen's first real chance on goal, they scored. Next set piece, next real big chance for them, they scored again. And it was just perplexing. It was such a bizarre performance for Magdeburg, who now have to remember to look over their shoulder because they only have a 5-point buffer to Regensburg in that playoff spot.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I meant before. Like, in a way, as a Bielefeld fan, I was looking at the game. I was like, what the hell is happening? Magdeburg here? Why? But in the end, ironically, it's also good for Bielefeld because obviously if they win, they could get ahead of Magdeburg, or at least equal points with Magdeburg on the match day. I mean, this was the game we can't forget. This is the game of the two sides with the worst defensive record. Magdeburg tied with Bielefeld with, I think, 49 goals conceded, Sandhausen 54. And it shows in part. But ironically, yeah, it's Sandhausen who went back to old Sandhausen days, and that's probably what Gerd Kleppinger wanted to give them. I mean, you might wonder why they did the detour over Tomas Oral. Then let the old man be in his peace with Kleppinger, but at the same time, like, was it necessary? It was just Magdeburg really lacked that precision that has been met off this match day. If you obviously it's a bit of luck, but at the same time you just need to create the chances. And yeah, you could see Magdeburg getting more and more anxious as the game went forward, and obviously the goal just came too little too late. And Sandhausen then looked ironically very, very safe. And shout out to Lewis, obviously, who traveled all the way from Elijah to Magdeburg, which is something, it's quite, yeah, that couldn't be any different, to be there in 24 hours in those two parts of the world. There, Sandhausen uploaded an Instagram reel of the Hartwald Hörfunk commentary for this game, and especially the two goals. And you can hear Lewis being very, very surprised with him not believing this is actually a goal. I would highly recommend watching that. It's a masterpiece of commentary to not believe itself. This is what we love. Those are the moments that stay in your head. So for Sandhausen, obviously, they want to make it interesting towards the end of the season. And obviously, would I not be involved, I would find it very funny. Because I am involved, I'm like, please don't. at the same time, they're playing Braunschweig next, and then Hamburg and Heidenheim. That's Magdeburg. Yeah. They play
Paderborn.
For Magdeburg, obviously Sandhausen plays Paderborn, Regensburg, Braunschweig. Mm. So especially Regensburg and Braunschweig games, I know I keep repeating myself, but this is going to be the interesting game for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Massive opportunities, of course, but they definitely found the spark, just a bit of energy that they've been lacking over the last many match days. You know, Thomas Schorl does that, so... Yeah, it gives them a chance when it seemed very hopeless. And we, you know, last week we were pretty adamant that it looked pretty bleak, but it gives them a little bit of hope. Right, let's move. Let's talk about Jahn Regensburg. They made the short journey to Fürth on Friday night. This game was tight, as you'd expect a regional derby like this. They took the lead. And I think they deserve their lead. A wonderful ball in from Mark Reedus. I think it was Mark Reedus. Brain's gone. Mind's gone. To find Prince Owusu. Now, prior to that, Gideon Jung completely just missed the ball. And a pretty routine clearance, I would have thought, for a player in that sort of area. But he completely missed it. Owusu makes an excellent touch. Cuts, gets to his left and beats... Andreas Linde. Then the biggest contention of the game on 66 minutes, and I'll be honest, when I was rewatching the highlights today, I am still confused as to what happened, but apparently Leon Guevara handled the ball. Okay, I mean, I didn't see it, and the highlights that I was watching also didn't see it. But referee Patrick Alt obviously had a better angle than I did. He was very quick and decisive to point at the spot. Julian Green scores, and then substitute Dixon Abiyama 11 minutes later made it 2-1, and that was your final. It's 3 wins in the last 5 for Greuther Fürth. Pretty close to safe. Regensburg were quite disappointed. There's images of Mirsad Selimbegovic throwing a little tanty. I think there were a lot of drink bottles who were not in a safe position, but none were harmed in the incident. So it's hard to really gauge where Regensburg are at, because they've had a few games now where they've fought their way back into getting a result, or they've found ways to win. This one, kind of a bit of pill to swallow for them, because they did a lot of good things defensively. You know, Jonas Urbig, who, as we are constantly reminded, is 19. He's under a lot of pressure to deliver, and you know, as the season has progressed, I've been really impressed with his growth as an individual to own the space, especially to join a team that is in the relegation battle, but the story is really a tale of two halves in that Regensburg were far more aggressive in the first half. They got their reward early in the second half, and they just didn't put Fürth to the sword. And as Fürth had, you know, they brought in the substitutes of Reischl and Abiyama, Fürth gained control, and that's where they did the damage.
And I mean, the thing is, it was in a way, it was a typical Fürth game. If you think actually, think back to the Magdeburg game where you had a first half where Fürth didn't really, let's say, give any joy to the spectators. Similar in this game, you could really see how Hokota was missing from that team. Mm. Too passive, too harmless, problems kind of combining midfield and offense in any way, a role that Hokota fulfilled perfectly, obviously, and who has always been one of the players who makes the difference for Fürth on a bad day as well as on a good day. And I mean, on the other side, Fürth, I think, has scored in the last 7 matches or so at home. So that was something that was ought to be happen. I think the pass for the Regensburg goal came in by Carlos Kahner, who was somewhere between fortunate and unfortunate in that game as well. Was this one scene where he, in the first half, I think, where he just doesn't hit the ball properly, or his first contact isn't right, and then you could have had an early goal in the first half already. And then it's, in a way, it's for Regensburg, sadly, typical, because they haven't played badly in the past couple of weeks, but they just don't get enough out of it. That's the problem. Obviously it does not help them in the table. And I mean, obviously you said that Sandhausen was the only team winning in the last 6, but still 2 points away from Arminia Bielefeld, and they could have leapfrogged them with a win. And as of now, it's not going to be easy playing against Kaiserslautern and obviously Sandhausen and Rostock. So those teams play a lot against each other. That's, by the way, I think one of the advantages Bielefeld maybe has. They only play Magdeburg out of this bottom teams now until the end of the season, and that's going to be on the last match day, where we hope it's going to be already safe. As a Bielefeld fan, I hope it didn't jinx it now. For Fürth, obviously, good result, although, that first half was nothing I want to see again.
Yeah, it was a whole lot of nothing, but they did, good tactical switches from Zorniger got them the momentum, and they took full advantage. So, yeah, interesting game there at Rostock. Fürth, Kaiserslautern come to the Jahn Stadion in Regensburg. And let's go to our final game. Let's talk Hansa Rostock. This will be pretty quick and swift. They were in Paderborn. They were carded 3-0 when Schreff was sent off, which it amazes me that referee Martin Petersen did not even instigate a foul in that moment, which was such a clear and obvious foul, which denied a clear and obvious goal-scoring opportunity. So it must have been clear and obvious from seeing the replays to give a red card. And from there, Rostock offered absolutely nothing. They did not. They had one shot on goal for the entire game, and that was early in the first half. After that, it was all Paderborn. It was a case of when and not if. On 58 minutes, it was Maximilian Rohr. 78 minutes, a wonderful goal from Florent Muslier at the edge of the box. And then Felix Plater ended the scoring with his 7th of the campaign. There is seriously not a whole lot to talk about, because the game seemed done and dusted from that particular red card.
I would agree. And I mean, that's you could really see all joy escaping Alois Schwarz's face and eyes when that red card happened. And I would agree. I mean, I'm not surprised with the referee who was on the pitch, but you can always overrule it. Give it as a foul, give a yellow card, it can't be overruled. Yeah. Like, But obviously, at the same time, it can only be overruled if you don't give an error, if it's a red card. But it wasn't. I mean, we've discussed a lot of red cards and those last man things this season, but this was not one of them.
Yeah.
And once again, the VAR is not there to solely correct mistakes. It's a backup plan.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think in a way I was even a bit disappointed that between the 1-0 and the 2-0, it was like 30 minutes or 20 minutes of a whole lot of nothing by Paderborn. It took them some time to get into the goal-scoring part of that game. Obviously, good for Paderborn to have players like Leipertz back, obviously Obermeier as well. So this is something they were hoping for. And obviously, at the same time, good for the duo Nudge and Platte, who were combining or teamed up for the 3-0. Also good, because obviously we criticized Felix Platte before, not really fulfilling that play. So all in all, good day for Paderborn. And for Rostock, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of hope left for them.
Oh, no. Usually for clubs, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And to be honest, there wasn't a whole lot Alias Schwarz could have done in this game, because it seemed like they were doomed the moment the red card happened. And the next three games aren't particularly easy. Fürth can be a bit difficult. Kaiserslautern away is always quite difficult. And then, you know, Jan Regensburg in what will be a gigantic game for that, in that particular point of the season. It really looks grim. I'm always told if you don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all. And I've got nothing good to say. Paderborn just kind of cakewalked it. It was pretty simple. They took their chances eventually. They had 28 of them, so I mean, it's not as if they didn't have chances in this game. So, kudos to them. It means that Paderborn are on 46 points. Now, they could come into contention if Hamburg decides to overcook themselves, which is very possible because we've seen it before and we might see it again. After 28 match days in our kick tip, Alex still remains a comfortable leader, 333 points for them. Kier, top scorer with 19. Congrats to them. And we have a podcast recommendation for this week. If you love your Zweite Bundesliga and you love to listen to it in the German language, then we highly recommend you listen to the Rasenfunk, the Kurzpasser Zweite Bundesliga episode. It just happens to have our wonderful co-host, Eva Lotzebola, along with Lucas and Oliver. So go check it out on wherever you listen to your podcasts. It is, of course, a must listen to. Listening to the Rasenfunk in general is an institution, so you should definitely listen to it regardless. And that's it for us. I think it's time for us to wrap up what has been an incredibly challenging but exciting match day 28. We'll be back again on the Wednesday to discuss everything from match day 29, including that epic Hamburg derby. So we hope you have a fantastic weekend. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.